Chris Guillebeau is the New York Times bestselling author of The $100 Startup and just released a new book called The Happiness of Pursuit, Finding the Quests That Will Bring Purpose to Your Life. Now, Chris has been on several quests himself, with one of his most notable being visiting every country in the world from 2002 to 2013. He's the creator of World Domination Summit and Pioneer Nation, held annually in Portland, Oregon, where we live, and has one of the most popular blogs, home for the remarkable people of all kinds, called The Art of Nonconformity. I learned about Chris from one of his TED Talks, where he shared the concept of not focusing on what you are passionate about, but rather what bothers you, and then going out and fixing that problem. Chris has more interesting travel stories than a box of Rice Krispies has individual Krispies, and he is genuine, approachable, and relatable to many. With all the things we could talk about with Chris, one thing came to mind that many don't discuss is his take on the power of understanding your reality of mortality and how that can motivate you to go after your dream. So Chris, thank you for joining us, and I'm looking forward to talking with you today.
Hey Ryan, thanks so much for having me. I love that Rice Krispies reference.
Yeah, I try to do some type of analogy with with the people I interview, and for some reason, Rice Krispies came to mind when I thought of you, so.
Well done.
Awesome. So Chris, in your new book, The Happiness of Pursuit, you talk a lot about those who go after their own quests, have several things in common, and I wanted to know if you could share with us, how can we benefit from understanding our own mortality?
So the mortality thing is really interesting because, you know, when I set out to interview people, I started by asking really basic questions. And I asked them, like, tell me about your quest and how much money did it cost and what was hard and what was easy along the way. But I noticed that people tended to come back with more deeper emotional kind of answers. And one of the themes that I quickly picked up on was a lot of people talked about this role of an emotional awareness of mortality. A lot of people talked about how they had always been sensitive to death, or maybe they had lost a close friend or family member, or maybe it was just something that always kind of like stayed with them, this sense that, you know, not only is every person going to die one day, but in fact, I personally, you know, will die. And it sounds a little depressing. It's not meant to sound depressing. It's just like something that they used to kind of help them to live with urgency. It helped them to make every day matter. It helped them to pursue whatever that quest was for them. So I thought that was really interesting.
Absolutely. And what do you think are some ways that someone can switch to more of an emotional side of knowing their own mortality?
I think it's not so much switching to, like, the emotional side of mortality. That's something that you either have or you don't. But but I think you asked earlier on, like, how can we benefit from this? Like, I think we benefit by thinking about, you know, how do we want to live each day of our lives? You know, what's worth living for? What's worth building a foundation upon, and what is our quest? And if we're not ready to think in terms of a grandiose quest, you know, like visiting every country in the world or something, I do believe that everyone can cultivate the value of adventure in their lives. Mm. So that's what I think, you know, that emotional awareness is like, okay, well, you know, here it is. I've got today. Today's great, you know, but once it's gone, I'm never going to have that again. So what am I going to do tomorrow that will lead me into next week and next month? And how can I really live with purpose? I think that's the benefit.
Living with purpose, I think, is important. And I think those two who are listening, to really understand that sense of adventure can mean something different for each of us, and to make sure that your adventure can be something that you find grandiose, and for the other person, it might not be that adventurous. So I think that with understanding your own mortality, you can identify what adventure is to you. So I really appreciate you talking about that, because not a lot of people bring that up. So thank you for mentioning that.
No, absolutely. And I think it's important to say, as you just alluded to, that adventure does mean different things to different people, and that's fine and wonderful. And not everybody wants to travel. Not everyone's able to travel or spend a lot of time, you know, doing something, you know, let's use that word, grandiose, around the world. But, you know, in the book, I talked about people who were crafting, who were knitting, you know, 10,000 hats, about a woman who's making a meal from every country in the world, you know, from her home in Oklahoma. So, again, you know, grandiose is not necessarily the goal. I think purpose and happiness are the goals.
Absolutely. And actually, I was listening to one of your interviews, and it inspired my wife and I to make two meals for each other that we've never made before, because I was listening to that.
That's a great little mini quest.
Mini quest.
And you don't have to suffer too much. You don't have to experience too much a challenge along the way for that one, hopefully.
Yeah, I was like, I don't think I can do a meal from every country in the world, but I can do two. I can commit to two, so.
Right.
Going actually in more into talking about being with somebody else and having a partner, how do you get support from your partner who might not necessarily have the same interests as you as a quest?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I think you don't necessarily have to have the same interest, as your partner. And I talk to people who, in some cases pursued joint goals, like you said, you and your wife making a different meal for each other. But I also talked with people who, they had a healthy relationship, but they also chose to pursue an individual dream, an individual goal, and that's okay too. So I guess if you, if you love your partner, you tend to want to support them. You tend to want to, encourage them, even if it's not something that you necessarily understand or relate to. But I also would say it's fair to say, like, in some cases, I talk to people whose family did really not understand, their quest for their project, and sometimes that happens too. And I don't think the answer is necessarily to abandon your family or your close friends, but I also think that you're going to need some other people as well who do understand, who do support you. So maybe in some cases it's about building an additional network.
Yeah, absolutely. You become who you surround yourself by, right? So you need to make sure that you're around those people who really support your quest. That's a good question, too. Right. What's the difference between a quest and a hobby?
So a hobby is something that you like to do. A hobby is like, you like to cook, you like to take photos, you like to play golf, whatever that is. And if you start getting, more into it, then maybe you want to improve your golf score, you want to improve your photography skills, and then you're spending more and more time on it, you're researching and experimenting, maybe it becomes a passion. And then at a certain point, maybe it becomes a project. Like a lot of photographers do this 365-day project where they take one photo every day and then post it. A quest is kind of an extension of all of that. A quest is when, I don't want to say it takes over your life. It doesn't necessarily have to do that, but it is something specific. It is something specific and long-term. It has clear parameters. It's not just like I'm going to cook a bunch of foreign food, It's like that story we mentioned about the woman who cooked a meal from every country in the world. It had structure. It had parameters to it. It had a timeline. And these kind of things can be very helpful. Yeah. They're not meant to restrict you. Like these parameters, these are your own parameters. Obviously, you set them for yourself. Mm-hmm. So it's not like that, someone saying, here's how you have to do it. But the parameters will help you kind of know what to do next and keep your focus on it. So that's the difference between like something that you like to do and then something that becomes, this big thing that you're working toward over time.
Okay. All right. I like that. One of the things that I really like about you was when I watched your TED Talk in Portland, you gave me a breakthrough because I've always heard, go after what you're passionate about, after you're passionate about. And you talked really about what bothers you and then going out and fixing that problem. And it was a new perspective for me, and it really helped guide me to think about some things that I wanted to change in my life. And I think sometimes we can learn from the negative side of things versus the positive side of things. And I'm an optimist, so I tend to, look at the good side of things, but I know I can do a better job of looking what the problem is. And one of the questions that I don't think I've heard anyone ask you in an interview that I wanted to ask you is, what has been the worst travel experience of all of your travels, and what did you learn from it?
Okay, great question. I had a lot of great experiences, and then I also, in 10 years of travel, a lot of bad experiences too, and that's just part of it. Interestingly, I feel like I had more negative travel experiences toward the end of the journey than I did in the beginning, and I think that's maybe because I was lightening up along the way. Like, I didn't actually became more comfortable and relaxed, and I wasn't necessarily like triple checking everything and like being worried all the time like I was in the beginning, so it's probably a good thing. But probably the most negative experience was I went to Eritrea, which is a small country that borders Ethiopia and North Africa, and I actually got deported from there. So I almost been deported a couple of times before. Pakistan, I almost got thrown out, and I was able to go and like actually had a great experience there. Saudi Arabia, same kind of thing. I didn't have the greatest experience there. It was just kind of boring, but I didn't get kicked out, so that was good. But Eritrea actually was like held through the night.
Wow.
In a little, jail / waiting room in the airport, and eventually put on a flight back to Cairo. So that wasn't super great, but it was a good story.
Yes, it's a very good story. And I've learned that leaders take those situations and they don't get upset by them, but they look at them in a new lens of what can I learn from this and how can I teach others from that as well. And I think you do a great job with that. And those who are listening, next time you have a mistake and next time you go or have a problem, you know, look at it through the lens of, okay, what can I learn from this? How can I make it better next time? And then how can I help people avoid this situation as well? So that's...
Yeah, no, that's great. That's great insight. I mean, I like how you said you're an optimist. I am too. I try to think of myself as like a realistic optimist in the sense that, you know, if something bad happens, like it's bad. I don't want to say oh, there's so many good things that are going to come out of this. Like, it's just a bad thing. It's, you know, but
right.
I totally agree.
Right.
Like, okay, going forward, there is a question of what is our response to it? You know, how are we going to live? Are we going to let this thing consume our lives? Because if we do, then ultimately we are the ones who are harmed.
Yeah.
And I say that as someone who has allowed that harm, you know, to come into my life many times, because, you know, I'm not able to like move through it. So I think it's good to you take whatever that is, and then as you said, like you move forward, and hopefully there's something you can learn and then teach others.
Absolutely. In one word, what would you say that you do?
Only one word.
Only one word. I'm limiting it.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. So normally I think of a few vocational words. You know, I would say like writer, traveler, entrepreneur. But if I only get one word, I don't know. I don't want to say like adventurer because that also like use your word grandiose earlier. It sounds kind of lofty. You know,
mm-hmm.
Like right now I'm on book tour. I'm a book tour. I'm staying in nice hotels.
Yeah.
You know, I take a taxi from the airport. Like I'm not really an adventurer at the moment.
Someone classify that as an adventurer.
Yeah, I don't know. I have to come. Yeah, cross off adventure off the list. Let's say curious.
Curious. Okay, I like that word. I like that word. And I would definitely agree with you. And with your blog articles and when I follow you on Twitter and Instagram, it's curious is definitely there. So that's interesting. And I think sometimes we can really help ourselves identify with that one word. I do struggle because I do feel like I am a lot of those things. But I think it's nice to have a common thread that tie you into, like you said, entrepreneur, your speaker, writer, adventurer. And that one thing that ties you all together, I think is nice to have. So thinking about that, I think is important.
That's good. I like it.
Okay, one question. If you could travel with one person who's no longer alive for a week, who would you take and where would you go?
I really have no idea because I like to travel by myself.
Okay.
So, you know, I really do like to travel by myself. I like to do things with people, but, you know, I actually enjoy the process of being alone and I don't mind that. So when I think about people who are no longer alive, like, I want to travel with. I don't know. No, I really no idea on that one.
All right. And why? Okay, so then why is it so important for you to travel alone? What can people learn from maybe taking some time in this hyper-communicated world and connected world? What's so important about having alone time?
Well, I think you alluded to it there with the hyper-connected world. Like, I actually enjoy the hyper-connected world. Like, I don't have times when I'm not online. I don't take, like, vacations on the internet or whatever.
Oh, okay.
I enjoy talking with people, you know, every day.
Yeah.
But I also like my little space, and it does kind of help me to you know, I am a natural introvert, so I derive a lot of energy from just kind of recharging by myself, and then I can go out and do other stuff with people, so I like a little bit of a mix.
I like that. Okay, so then if not one person, what about this? If you could only travel to one other country for the rest of your life, what would you choose? Only one, back and forth.
Yeah, only one. Again, yeah, it's good you have these parameters, because normally I would give you, like, 10 or something. So if I could only, like, obviously it's tough. You have to make, like, trade-offs and sacrifices. That's with any good quest. But if I could only pick one country for the rest of my life, I would pick Australia.
Awesome.
I live there, and I try to spend several weeks a year in Australia.
Awesome. And the reason why I ask one, and this is for everybody listening, is it really helps identify what is it about that country, that person, that time, that experience that you're finding that you need to think, okay, this is where I want to be spending my time or who I want to be spending my time with, people like this, places like this. And it can help you identify really what interests you and what makes you feel alive. So that ability to sit down and think about that one is really important. Chris, why should somebody read your new book?
I'm not a big fan of telling people, you know, why they should or shouldn't do something. But of course, I do want them to read the book if they find this conversation somewhat interesting. So I guess, the new book is, it's called The Happiness of Pursuit. It's about quest, it's about striving, essentially. It's about working towards something over time that matters to you. It's not just a memoir. I didn't want to write, like, Chris Hillebush, 10 years of travel stories around the world. Like, that's somewhat interesting, but I don't know if it really helps people. Right. So I tried to avoid that. I told the stories of lots of other folks, but I didn't want to just present a whole bunch of stories.
Yeah.
So the book really has a prescriptive message, and that message is that a quest can bring purpose and meaning to your life. Cultivating the value of adventure, like we've been talking about, that can bring purpose and meaning to your life, no matter who you are, no matter what you're into, even if you don't want to travel. And then here's exactly how you do it. So I'm trying to show people like a path they can follow, but also adapt, to their own purposes. So I think that's why they should read it if they want to.
Awesome. And I'd highly recommend everybody pick it up. You can actually meet Chris on tour right now, too. I believe he still has more than 25 cities to go to. If you go to chrisguillebeau.com or theartofnonconformity.com, you can find out more about his tour. Anything else that you want to mention about getting people in touch with you? And what I love about Chris is he's so personal, and he's one of those guys who's, he's a New York Times bestseller, and this guy who's traveled all over the world, but you feel like when you talk to Chris, he's talking right to you, and y'all have been buddies for a really long time. So that shows a lot about Chris, and he's genuine. So I'd really recommend not even just picking up his book, but connecting with him on his blog. He actually just had an awesome giveaway on the 19th. You still have time for it to win 25,000 airline miles. So he gives away things every Friday on his blog. And he's just a great guy. So, Chris, thanks so much for joining us today. Is there anything else that you would like to add about your new book or how people can get in touch with you?
No, it's a big honor. Thank you for saying all those things. And I'm definitely happy to connect with your listeners however they would like. They're more than welcome to email me or find me on Twitter and send me a note or whatever I can do for them. Thank you.
Thank you. And Chris, thanks for speaking with us today. We look forward to keeping track of the upcoming quests you have in your future. And todayers, thanks for listening. And remember to stop waiting for things to happen. Start making things happen. My name's Ryan, and I hope you have a very good rest of your day.